Hey, and welcome to the 6 Minute Mile podcast. I'm David LaValle, and our guest today is Marcus Smith, a former professional rugby player turned endurance athlete and amateur philosopher. At first glance, Marcus seems like a type A cubed manly man who lives for challenges like running 30 marathons in 30 days, cycling up Mont Ventoux 3 consecutive times, and running nonstop for 24 hours to cover 207 kilometers on a 400 meter track. He does not own a television. He uses phrases in his blog like, people are becoming lazy, and hard work scares people. But underneath that rugged veneer is the thoughtful coach who cares deeply about developing both the bodies and the spirits of his athletes. We picked his brain shamelessly for free advice on nutrition, mindset, and training regimes. We loved his thoughtful descriptions of how we can all be motivated to set modest goals and climb our own Everest. Enjoy, and we'll see you out there. Good awesome. Morning.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening from Dubai, whichever one.
Yeah, I'm jealous, man. We it's like, you know, 28 degrees Fahrenheit and spitting rain here in Boston, Massachusetts.
Well, to make you feel better, I think we had at least 28 degrees Celsius today, so it was great.
I love it. So how did you wind up in Dubai?
I came here when I was a kid with my parents. So I've been here the best part, almost touching 38 years now. So yeah, it's been real.
And what did your parents do that took them to Dubai?
My father just worked in the food industry. He worked for a company that imported and distributed food, because there was obviously not much sort of Western food here back in the day. And that's how it all started. So yeah, I came as a kid, and I was educated back in the UK, and I did my degree back in the UK. And then I came back, and it's good. It's home. I love it. Life's good.
You lived through the whole crazy boom cycle there too, right?
Which one?
Yeah, right. Boom, bust, yeah.
Yeah. And that's what's cool. It's like, that's what's crazy about this place. And even now, like, you know, whilst the rest of the world I read is just in a crazy state. And it's a crazy state here, but like, we're open for everything. And the only real thing we have to do is just wear a mask and pretend that we're like socially distanced, and everything's really awesome. So yeah, it's quite a resilient place, it's awesome. I love it.
That's very cool. And so the endurance community is surviving and thriving there. So you're able to get out and do your stuff and do group runs and rides.
Yeah, we are. I mean, it was interesting, David, at the start, obviously we have quite a big endurance coaching business. We have about 250 to 300 clients. I have 6 endurance coaches working for me. And when obviously events were canceled, people were like super shaky and stuff. And we just really doubled down on community. We created a number of different touch points. We're putting educational seminars on like twice a week. We're just connecting with people that we know around the world and getting people to come and talk and just supporting people. And it's just made us, we recruited more endurance clients during sort of the lockdown and the crazy times, which is just awesome. And I think we were about 50 or 60 people running at the track this morning. So yeah, it's awesome. It's
excellent.
Been wild. Yeah, it's really cool.
Now, are those mostly expats?
Yeah, they are. We probably have less than a handful, less than several sort of UAE nationals with us. But the ones that we have are all in. And it might seem foreign to some people, and it's worth explaining, but we have some females that are fully covered with the hijab and everything that do triathlon.
Wow, you know? Really?
Yeah, and they train throughout summer, where we get up to 110 Fahrenheit and humid as hell. And they train throughout summer, fully covered, down to here, full down to the ankles, and they don't complain a bit. It's inspiring. It really is.
Really dumb question, but is there such a thing as indoor or performance hijabs now? Can you get?
Yes, there is.
Yeah, good. All right.
It's not a dumb question at all. Yeah. Yeah. Nike actually, Nike actually sort of developed it, and all the brands have jumped on board. So they use the same like moisture wicking fabric.
Right.
But you know, if it wasn't a little bit, it would be a little bit taboo if we dressed up everyone in the hijab and in the outfit that the girls wear. But I think it'd be a great exercise to say, right, guys, it's the middle of summer. We're going to let you experience what they experience. It'd be looked on in a funny way. So it was a little bit culturally sensitive.
No, I hear you. That'd be great for all the hard-o dudes, right? Be like, okay, yeah, you're looking down your nose at these girls who are running 8-minute miles, but guess what? Yeah.
Exactly, mate. Because, I mean, literally, I always just wear shorts. I never wear a shirt when I run. And, you know, even this morning it wasn't cold, but it was like, I don't know, 14 Celsius. And, you know, I just run in without a shirt, just in my shorts. So it gets hot, everything comes off. So
yeah.
It'll be interesting.
So yeah. Now when you were a kid growing up there, I know you were really into rugby and became a professional, and played in the Sevens World Cup and pretty amazing achievements. But was there a good rugby culture there? Was this, or that mostly developed back at school in the UK?
That's a good question. And it sort of feeds into, I think, why endurance is such a big part of my life now, and community is such a big part of my life, because there was a rugby club here. And that's where I learned to play. And we spent a lot of time there as kids. My dad was playing, but that really sort of took off later down the line when I went back to boarding school in the UK when I was 9 years old. And that's when it kind of sort of took off a little bit more. But any community based stuff, I've always been super interested in. And, you know, I remember as a kid, my parents would organize runs, rides, triathlons from our house, and, you know, that was life growing up. So I sort of had a great environment right from the start, which was awesome.
Now, were your parents pretty accomplished athletes, or are they?
Yeah, they were. And actually, they still are. You'll enjoy this, David. I've got my dad here at the moment. I got both my parents here at the moment. And at the weekend, we went to support our team in a race. And I took my dad with me. He's 74 now. And I said, Dad, we're going to wake up in the morning. We're going to go and check out a little bit of the course. So I woke him up at about 10 to 4 and just threw him a head torch. And we just went on this trail course. And he's like, where are we actually going? And then the runners came through at about the 6K point. And I've heard multiple people reach out to me. Was that you and some other guy on the course at like 5:30 this morning in pitch black? I was like, yeah, I took my dad there and it was great. So, I mean, he's a little bit slower now, but he still rides his bike. He still swims a lot. And my mom actually still comes to my gym, does CrossFit classes 3 days a week and all of that stuff when she's here. So it's super awesome.
Oh, good for her. That's amazing. And then, so what was it about rugby that appealed to you so much?
That's a really good question, because a lot of people are like, that sport's just stupid. You just hit each other.
No, it's growing in the US. It's it's a safer alternative to American football, right?
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, that's how they look at it. But I mean,
it doesn't feel that way when you're playing it. I know, but yeah,
feel that way. You know, to be honest, David, I just loved what I said before. I loved the community aspect of it. I loved that it was just mates just getting it done. You know, and you know, if I'm in trouble for a few minutes, someone can pull me up, can help me through. And I was quite quick in rugby, and that was always quite good fun. I mean, when you're a kid and you can, like, in any sport, when you can run away from the other kids to score, in my case, a try or something like that, like, in a weird way, that's quite a nice buzz. And you know, I just enjoyed, I mean, being English, a lot of people would say you probably enjoyed the social afterwards, which, mate, I have to be honest, I loved the social afterwards. It was fantastic. And I have a lot of blurred memories of university days, you know, of university rugby matches. But it was just awesome. And you know, with rugby, with the strength side as well, and it is quite an interesting sport. It brings together, obviously, a lot of skill, a lot of fitness to last for the 80 minutes and an incredible amount of strength. So although it's a one sport compared to triathlon, we're training in all different ways, which was, that was always super interesting for me.
Now, when I was a kid playing sports, I used to look at the cross country or the track team, and I would think, oh, that's what you do to get in shape to play a real sport. And then later in life, I thought, well, that was a dumb view. This is actually really cool when I got more into endurance sports. But I don't know. Did you go through a similar? You're probably more evolved intellectually, but.
No, I did, mate. And because I was good at cross country when I was at school, I was also in the cross country team and in the top sort of teams for that. And a lot of my rugby mates were like, literally like what you said, like you run to get fit for rugby. And I was like, nah, I run to race, you know? And that was, I used to love cross country at school, and it came with a lot of privileges. Like I was allowed to wake up earlier before the other kids, and they let me go off running in the forest in the freezing cold and snow. And I just remember being at breakfast, like when all the kids are coming down, sleeping their eyes, and I'm just hyper because I'd been running. And it was just, so I ran cross country all the way through school, and I loved every single minute of doing both, to be honest.
Oh, good man. So you appreciated endurance sports from an early age too.
Yeah. And that was the thing. Like it was actually quite weird because a lot of the older boys would ask me in my boarding house, they're like, what do you think about when you run, and why are you running? And so I think I was thinking about that stuff from the age of like 12 or 13. And I was like, you know, and it's the answer today that I give to a lot of people. Like sometimes you don't need to think about anything. You just need to be. And in that being, you're just living, you know? And I mean, you know, mate, and you can go out for an hour or 2 hours and it's like, what do I actually think about? Oh, not much. But then there's other days where you solve all of your problems, and you probably solve the world's problems as well, isn't it?
So, right.
You know, I was questioning what was going on from a young age, which was cool. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. And were you sort of born with a little bit of this inner drive? So you're not a lazy person by any stretch, but I mean, did you have lazy days as a kid? Did you ever say, you know what, maybe I'll lie on the couch this afternoon and not go for my workout?
Yeah. To be honest, I think I went through something. I remember one holidays. I mean, in my early years, cause my parents were so active, I was like active the whole time and running with them and chasing them down the street. And I just wanted to do what they wanted to do. But then I think like we all do, when I was a teenager, I'd come home from boarding school and I just want to sleep the whole time. Yeah. And I got to a point where I was freaking out because I couldn't get to sleep at night because I'd been sleeping the whole day. And my dad kind of said to me, he's like, you just can't live like this, you know? And it's not, mate, I've never been overweight. I'd never, you know, I've always been, I'd wake up and then I'd do a load of sport, but he just sort of said, you know, I think life is more than just laying in bed the whole day. And then these images of when I was younger, I'd go into my parents' room on the weekend, early morning, like 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And my dad wouldn't be there. He'd be out riding his bike or out running. And these images started coming back to me. And I was like, yeah, that's way better than this sleeping in. Like, this sucks. And so I flicked the switch. And since then, since about 13, 14 years old, mate, I think if I sleep past 7 a.m., like it's huge. I'm normally up at about 4:30. So, and I love it. It's awesome.
Good for you. And but when you retired from professional rugby, was there a little bit of a transition there, or did you always know you wanted to dive right into another challenge? Were you a little bit lost when you retired and didn't have that daily mission?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I get asked that a lot. And the real answer is I stopped playing rugby on about the 8th of December of 2009.
Okay.
And literally within 10 days, one of my friends called me and he said, let's run the Dubai Marathon. And I was like, yes. I'd never done one. I'd done all this cross country. 5 miles was kind of my jam. And, you know, I'd always kept my running pretty decent through my rugby career, but now I'm just over 30 years old and I was there and I just went, yes. And he said to me, you know, it's in 5 weeks. And I'm like, I'm too excited already. I'm like, yeah, I don't care, you know? and I started training, David, and he said, well, you know a lot about this. You're a runner. And so I'm like, yep, chest out. I'm like, yeah, I know exactly what I'm doing. And I said, tomorrow morning, we'll run 21K. And he's like, are you sure this is the way to go about it? I'm like, I'm absolutely sure, mate. And long story short, the first weekend we ran 21, the second weekend we ran 21, then we ran like a 30, and then we ran like a couple of 10s, and then we went to the marathon. And I quite arrogantly had said, because I knew about running, I was like, well, and this is no offense to anyone, but I was like, it has to be a sub-4 marathon, otherwise, what's the point, you know?
Right,
and
right.
I don't want that to sound bad, but I was just like, you know, so that was my goal. And mate, I crossed the finish line and I still have the certificate and it was like 4:01. And I'm just under this finish line, completely new sensation. 6 weeks ago, I'm playing in front of 25,000 people, you know, adrenaline, everything that I was used to, just amazing. And I've gone back to this thing called running, which, as I said, I had a lot of pleasure of my childhood, and I failed. And I was just like, I was just empty, mate. I didn't know if I wanted to cry. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I called one of my buddies and I said, mate, we need to, my wife was away. And I called one of my buddies and said, I need you to come for lunch with me. And he's like, what's up? And I was like, this happened, never again. I said, no more marathon stuff. And he just looked, I can remember it like it was yesterday, mate. It's over 10 years ago. And he just looked at me and he just smiled from ear to ear. And I was like, you bastard. You know exactly that I'm lying and that this is going to be it from now on. And that was kind of, yeah. And then I was like, obviously that was when CrossFit was coming pretty strong and they started to open in 2011. But I was like, I'm going to run. And that's kind of, you know, that's when I really got back into it. It took me 2 years actually to run another marathon. I just did a lot of shorter stuff. And then I was like, why am I kidding myself? And I was like, let's get this marathon done while still training for CrossFit. And, you know, I ran like a 350 or something. So I sort of ticked that box. But when I did that marathon the second time, a couple of my friends were talking about ultra, and I'd been helping this lady in ultra, and someone sent me Marathon de Sable, and and bang, that was the catalyst, mate. I read this thing, you know, when you get something kind of on an email and you drop everything,
right?
And I'm just reading it and I'm just going, oh, this is incredible. And literally I'm signing up on the spot.
So describe that race for our listeners who do not know what it is. It's a pretty amazing desert race, right? It's one of the hardest on the planet.
Yeah. So Marathon de Sable is now 35 years old. It's tagged as the toughest foot race on earth. That's very, very debatable, but that's how they market themselves. And that's beautiful. It's through the Sahara Desert. And it was started by a gentleman who just went to explore. It's a 6-day multi-stage race covering 250 kilometers. Incredible amount of sand dunes, incredible amount of heat. And I think what's really unique, and this might not be everyone's cup of tea, but what's really unique about this race, and I did it in 2014 or 2015, is that there's 1,300 people on this journey with you. And it's fully self-supported, meaning you only get given water along the way. You carry everything in your backpack for 6 or 7 days. The Sahara is not just sand, it's clay, it's rocks, it's up and down, it's cold at night, it's hot in the day, and you're sleeping in a tent. It's not even a tent, it's like a cover that just drops through the night as soon as the wind blows, and you're this close, like it would not be good for social distancing. You're like this close to your competitors and your fellow runners, let's call them that. And everyone stinks. So it's just because you get rationed the water. So everyone just gets a real enough water to stay hydrated. So there's no washing,
bathing water. Yeah.
Nothing like that, David. So, you know, it's one of the most unique things I've ever done. I mean, I've since run a lot of different ultras, but it's somehow seen as, can we say, like the mecca of ultra running for a lot of people, of multi-stage ultra running. It's just a super unique experience. And 1,300 people from around the world. There's a big French contingent because the founder is French. And I was just like, I have to go and do this race. It's just something that I have to do. And I still, mate, I still think it's one of the most amazing races I've been in.
That's great. Wild. So I think one of the things when I read a biography like yours and I say, wow, he's living this epic life and he does all these amazing challenges and, you know, and then my first thought is, well, all right, he's probably not juggling, you know, a marriage or kids or a challenging job or that, and, you know, this is his full-time job just to be fit. But you were doing a lot of this stuff when you had really challenging sales jobs. You're traveling around the world for Adidas and Nike. And so, so you know, maybe I have that wrong. I know you've got a lot of businesses going on in this industry. But back then, you were working your tail off and training. How did you figure out that balance? What was the structure?
It was interesting. That's a really good question. And it's a question that I get asked a lot now because I run two different businesses. I have a CrossFit gym and I have a paleo food company as well. And, you know, a lot of people to take care of. And it's so the challenges are the same. But one of the key things for me, David, and I think for a lot of people is there's certain non-negotiables. And because sport's always been such a big part of my life, I think I've understood from the start what the benefits of sport are in my life. And I will make time every single day, and I have done throughout my career, to do sport. I haven't sacrificed on sleep. I still sleep 8 hours a night religiously. I've done that pretty much forever because it's so, so important. But other things had to go. And by that, I mean, sometimes hanging out with friends. I don't have television, so I never watch like series. I never watch the news. I just read the news for 10 minutes in the morning. So I think I've made sacrifices in a number of different areas. I don't have many hobbies outside of running in deserts or riding my bike, or, you know, I'm not into a load of other stuff. So we have a finite amount of time, and I've just chosen to invest my time in that. And it's been like that since I was a kid, since I was at school. If it meant going to bed early to wake up early so I could go running, I would do that. But it's something that for some people, it feels quite alien. But when you figure out what you want and what you want, how it makes you feel, then I think it's just so natural. You know, like I love it. If you say to me, like, tomorrow morning, I'll be up super early and we'll be riding. And Thursday morning, I'm already excited about Thursday morning because I get to go running along the beach with a bunch of lunatics and have a coffee afterwards. And, you know, so, but it's not, the easy option is sitting on the couch and, you know, stuff. I never go to the cinema. I've been with my wife 17 years. I think we've been once to the cinema or something like that. So, you know, people are now thinking, well, this guy is missing out on a load of life. But to be honest, mate, I love it. And I don't think I know any different. I don't think it's the only way, the way that I live and the way that I prioritize things. I think, you know, you can have a very fulfilled life going to the cinema, watching Friends on binging it, or however it goes on Netflix, whatever those phrases are. I'm not too sure. But yeah, so that's, I just prioritize. And still now, as I say, I'm running two of my own companies. Every week, the first thing I do when I program for my clients, I program for myself in Training Peaks for 2 weeks in advance. And that fills my calendar first. And then I put all my business meetings around that. And,
I like that trick. Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing I do, like, you know, on, for example, on Thursday morning, I have an easy run. So if someone wants to meet me, I'll just tell them, you just need to meet me 5 a.m. And we can have that meeting then. Because if it's important, then we'll do it. And actually, most of my endurance coaches, all but one, their interview was a run. So we'll go, like, one of the guys I flew to the UK, I wanted to interview him. We ran 30K around London. You pretty much know after 30K.
Yes, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if they've said the right things, they haven't complained, they're not too tired, they're probably going to be a pretty good endurance coach. So
when they blow snots out, they blow it away from you, not toward you. You know, some basic etiquette.
Exactly, mate. So we'll do a lot of that, and I'll try and, you know, especially with cycling as well. Obviously, I cycle a lot. So a lot of times I'll try and put business meetings on the bike. I'll have pretty much as many of my client review meetings or update meetings, goal setting meetings. We'll do that whilst we're training as well. So it's just a little bit about managing the time and just always make sure like your sport and your health is for me, it's life. It makes you who you are. So it has to be, close to the top with your family, obviously, of your priority lists.
Yeah. Now, so what's your advice to clients who maybe say, okay, that works for you, Marcus, but I still have a television in my living room. I'm still going to do a little of that. And, you know, I've got some ingrained habits so I like the idea of, hey, let's lay this out in Training Peaks. Let's schedule this as if it's your most important business meeting of the week or your kid's doctor's appointment. You're just not going to skip certain things. Is that the main piece of advice, or how else do you teach people to kind of rejigger their mindset and priorities?
When I take people on, David, we have about a 30 question questionnaire before I'll start to coach someone. And I'll ask people, describe to me your perfect holiday. I'll ask them if they press snooze. I'll ask them all of these questions I'll ask people if they read and what books they've read recently. And then what we're able to do from the outset, we're able to have a super open conversation about current behaviors, desired outcomes, and then behaviors that we might have to implement and or change to get those desired outcomes. And when you're brutally honest, like a lot of people are hiding behind a lot of stuff at the moment. And what we try and do straight away is we just try and break that down, because I take it very personally and very seriously when someone comes to me and gives me their body. They're basically, as a coach of anything physical, someone's going, here you go, David. Here's my most personal asset, my body. Please help me to make it better. And that's a huge responsibility for me as a coach. And also, it's a huge amount of trust for them. So if I haven't asked them if they're happy in all areas of their life or what really makes them tick, and I haven't managed to drill down, then I'm not able to change those behaviors. But when we do that, we're able to change it. And people will start to realize that, yes, although binge watching Netflix sometimes makes you feel relaxed, it often doesn't do a lot for you as a human. Like, it just doesn't, you know, like.
No, absolutely. No, you look down at your watch, you say, well, what, you know, with that 45 minutes I just wasted doing nothing, right? I could have had a nice little run, right? I could have had a nice little workout down in the basement.
Exactly. And that's, I think that's really a big role of a coach or people trying to help people. It's not telling people that it's wrong. It's guiding them to make that decision. We're all adults. For a lot of my work, it's almost like I'm just holding up a mirror whilst I'm asking questions. I'm just asking you to have a look into what really makes you happy. And you know, endurance sport's quite weird, because it's almost like a cheap midlife crisis for a lot of people. So we're getting people that at some point are quite broken. It could be, they could be in a bad relationship. They could be in a bad job that, you know, they're a little bit stuck, and they're using this sport to distract them, which is great, but it's so powerful, endurance sport. It can do more than just distract you. It can change your life, and it can actually re-empower that bad relationship or re-empower that bad job or that lack of enjoyment you have in that job. So, you know, it's a tough process, mate. And I'm not saying that it goes smooth with everyone. Some people I send my questionnaire to, and they're like, dude, nah, I just want a run program. And I'm like, I'm not just going to write you a run program because that's what you think you want. That's what you think will solve it. But I can't charge someone for a run program unless I know in my heart that it's going to work for them. And if I don't know what motivates you, then how can I write your program? You know? So it's, and people might be going, yeah, this is a little bit too much. This guy thinks he's a shrink, something like that. But it's true. Like, as coaches, we have a huge responsibility and to really help people live better lives. So we kind of need, and the relationships develop. Like I've got clients that I've been with for 5 years, and you know, we can have really deep conversations, and you know, myself as well. I'll open up to them. I'll talk about my childhood. I'll talk about subconscious behaviors that I have that, you know, and we really can have, and that's what I love as well. You probably notice I love like deep conversations to really understand like, why do we behave like we behave? Because humanity fascinates me in that way. Because I think if we can figure that out, and by enough of this research, then it becomes incredibly easy to motivate people and to help people get what they want.
Now you clearly love goals, and you love doing your 50K ride, 50K run, 50K ride, or you know, cycling up Mont Ventoux 3 times in a row, or you know, running for 24 straight hours on a track. So 30 marathons in 30 days. So you love, to me, those goals and tasks and accomplishments, right? Is that an important part of the program for most people? How important is goal setting? How important is an audacious goal versus just, you know, maybe I'd like to run a marathon someday?
I think sort of the general feeling is that we should have big goals. We're told to have big goals. Set goals that scare you. That works for some people, mate. But although I have big goals, I have the big goal because that demands a big process. And the process is actually what I love, because the process is waking up every morning with a real fire for the day. Every day, if you have a big goal coming up, if I'm running, when I was training to run 24 hours around the track, every single day means something. And to me, that's living, really. I would love that everyone wakes up every single morning with a real drive and a real purpose. And if you have a big goal, even if your goal, and this is what I always say, everyone's Everest is different. There are a lot of endurance athletes that are way, 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 way more extreme than me, better than me in everything. And I love them, but I'm me and I'm climbing my Everest. And there's certain people that might be listening that are going, oh, this guy's too extreme running 24 hours on a track. It's cool. If you're at 5 miles at the moment, it's the same. The process to get you that 5 miles, you have to absolutely love. So for some people, big, scary, hairy goals, whatever you want to call it, is not the right start point. For some people, the right start point is giving them something to wake up for every morning. And I've worked with a lot of people that are, you know, ex-alcoholics or current alcoholics suffering from severe depression, anxiety. You know, if I talk about running 1K, I'm almost putting them off incredibly. But if I talk about waking up tomorrow morning at a time that you can see the sunrise and going for a beautiful walk whilst listening to a podcast such as this, then they start to think, actually, that's quite cool. And that's all I do some days. If I'm injured or if I'm struggling a bit, and mate, I struggle like everyone struggles, you struggle, we all struggle. I'll just wake up, I'll make sure I'm early, and I'll make sure it's this day's breaking, and I'm listening to something that's just interesting, and that's a little bit more sort of thought-provoking than just that Netflix series that we're talking about. You know, because that's how we're designed as human beings as well. We're designed to think on deep levels. We're intelligent beings for the most part. And we're also designed to respond to daybreak and also to the end of the day. That's called a circadian rhythm. It's very straightforward. That's how we're designed. So a lot of the time, for me, it's going back to simplicity, and it's really looking back to the way that we have behaved in the past as a race, and seeing what of those behaviors we can really tap into that are supernatural for people and are going to get people a natural high that's not running a marathon. So whilst those big goals are good, I think we if people are struggling, we got to fall in love with it, with a daily process, and just waking up every morning going, this is it. I can't wait for today because I'm ready to live.
So what's the reward for you personally? So I know when I've back in the old days, when I'd run an okay race, I would be embarrassed to tell you how many times I went back and rechecked the results. I just got a perverse little high out of that. I'm like, wow, huh? Yeah. Look at that. Oh, I guess I didn't notice what my halfway split was before. Yeah. That's pretty cool. But, I wouldn't post anything on Facebook or Instagram, but it was just my own little reward. Subconsciously, I didn't even realize I was doing it. But what is it for you? When you accomplish one of these, you said, I love your thought about, hey, it could be as mundane as walking on the beach at sunrise, right? That's an amazing experience. But what's your sort of secret pleasure when you do accomplish one of these? Do you like looking back at your training logbook? Do you like, getting a kick out of people, clicking like on Instagram? I don't know. What does it for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's a number of different motivating factors for me. I love seeing Training Peaks green. Setting out a plan and then achieving it is incredible. Some things that are really motivating, and to be honest with you, David, I use a lot of social media because I'm able to achieve one of my sort of goals, which is to try and help other people and enjoy sport as well. And some days you'll get a message drop in that I've been following you on Instagram for 3 years and today I ran 1K.
Yeah, huge.
Wow. Because sometimes, and I say it, sometimes putting stuff out on social media, like, it's hard, like, to keep it on point and but I'm like, wow, all that time. And this person lives in a completely different country and they've now managed to run 1K, or something's just clicked with them, That's a massive satisfaction for me. For myself as well, mate, is that sometimes I'll set goals. Like when I ran 24 hours around a track, I just wanted to run 200K nonstop. And I was like, that's going to push me in a way, And then we got like 100K into that. And I'm like, actually, I'm just going to change. I'm just going to change the goalposts here. And I'm just going to do 5 marathons back to back because I was in a good shape. And then obviously I was not in good shape and I end up with 207K in 24 hours. But when I look back at that, it's a difficult thing to explain. And it happens a lot in ultras as well, that you put so much into these races, emotional investment, time investment, relationships, you sacrifice so much, and then you're there and you're in this moment and you're like, this is life. I've never felt so alive. And I remember one of my friends, he's quite a witty guy, he's from Australia and he's an endurance athlete as well. And I posted a picture of the end of my 24 hour run last year. And I was just holding onto my wife, just literally falling over. And he wrote a comment and he said, this is an incredible picture. He said, you've never felt so alive, but at the same time, you wished you were dead. Quite the conundrum. And I'm like, wait, that's it. But when I could explain multiple times where you just have these insane moments of clarity and thoughts on humanity and what life means. And it is very deep, mate, and it's very thought-provoking. And I speak about it to my wife, Holly, and I speak about it with my friends as well. And to me, that there's a lot of satisfaction in that because that brings this incredible amount of personal growth and awareness. And really, mate, from doing these things and from trying different formulas, be it in daily living or be it in races, and having the ability and the trust of my clients to pass that on to them, that's incredible. It's almost like, I had a teacher at school that I would just always want to speak to him because I would always learn something. He must have felt like when I actually learned it and could perform that he'd achieve something. I'm almost a teacher for a group of people who are my clients. And I find, as I said earlier, like I feel that's a great privilege and something that I have to serve people. That's what I'm here for, because I kind of have this skill set that I can do it. And that drives me a lot. So yeah, there's a few different things going on there.
Now, so is Holly also an endurance athlete?
No.
Good. You drive each other crazy, I'm sure.
There couldn't be two of us in the same house, David. I think that'd be
absolutely.
She loves CrossFit. She works out every day. She's in incredible shape. She doesn't take rest days, although I keep on telling her to. Yeah. But I think for her, the thought of super long stuff is just not super interesting, mate. And
yeah.
You get satisfaction in other ways. And she's actually we set up the food company together, and she's the brains behind Smith Street Paleo. She designs all of the recipes, and you know, she's amazing. But yeah, she likes to come out and hike and get out in nature, and she loves to sit on the beach. So
so she's an outdoors person. She gets a high out of being outdoors and being active, but just not. Yeah, just not doing a 200K run.
Yeah, absolutely right. That's it.
Yeah, that's good stuff. So now I want to pick your brain briefly on nutrition, right? Because, you know, you've got the food company, you've got a CrossFit box. So what are you – so are you a pretty strict paleo diet disciple?
Yeah, I am, and that's really because of Holly. She was a flight attendant for a number of years. When I started CrossFit – it was more about zone diet, which I could never really understand.
Yeah.
And you know, eating in blocks, like, come on, give me a break. And then sort of paleo came into that, and I started reading about it, and she was suffering from inflammation from flying. Mm. And we sort of, and also, mate, to be honest, I have a sweet tooth, and I knew that chocolate and Mars bars and Snickers were not good for me. But then I saw paleo and I was like, well, we can make these from dates and nuts and cacao. And we just started experimenting, and it cured Holly's inflammation around her ankles. Was incredibly painful when she used to fly. And, you know, then we sort of start, you take stuff out, you know, you get rid of dairy, and then you read about dairy and kind of that it's not really as pure as it used to be. And, you know, so we shelved that. And then about 10 years ago, I was like, it's January, I'll just stop eating bread, full stop. We never really eat much anyway. And, you know, I just stopped eating it for the month. And then I got to the end of January and I was like, well, does it serve me?
Yeah.
No. So I got rid of that. And, you know, and then it's like, actually this way of eating is quite straightforward. It's, you know, it's just natural. It's vegetables. It's meat. You know, we have good levels of carbs, proteins, and fat, and you start to feel really good. And energy levels are great. Brain clarity was super good. And then obviously, you know, and I think this is what's important. Folks that are listening, I'm sharing what's worked for me in all of my life.
Right.
If you take this show and go, I'm going to live like him, it's going to be tough. You know, you have to do these experiments on yourself. But, you know, then I'd have some sauce from a jar every now and then, and I'd be like, oh, I don't feel good in the gut from having that. You know, and so that's how the eating developed. So I would say right now we probably eat, or for the last sort of 7 to 8 years, we would eat about 90% of our food would be sort of strictly in the guidelines of paleo. When I'm training a lot and also in races, that will change. I'd use a lot of rice during like heavy training, sort of just like empty carbs. Also, I make like rice and peanut butter and jam. I make my own energy bars, or Holly will make energy bars. So I quite like rice. We'll use oats sometimes as well. Trying to use gluten-free oats. And, you know, I've noticed that I don't have any gut irritation with it, and I'm able to extract the energy from it. But for the most part, I'll use a lot of dates. Dates and nuts are super great. And, you know, so that's kind of, that's where we get about 90%. We're still, a lot of people ask about alcohol, you know, I still have a beer. Like, I love cold beer. It's amazing. Like,
it's good that you're showing somewhat of your human side. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that's something that's super important to us. Like, Holly is a very good cook, and we'll sit down most weekends and she'll cook something great, or I'll cook a nice barbecue, and we'll enjoy a bottle of wine together. And we spend a lot of time just together, talking, eating, you know, and yeah. Red wine sort of complements that a lot. So, you know, that's where we sort of lose that 100%, but I'm quite comfortable with that as well, mate. But yeah. You know, I'm not kind of going out tonight and looking for some dessert and having an ice cream. You know, I might have a mango or something. So, you know, and I think that's what people really need to figure out, a correct testing of what works well with their body and what perhaps harms their body. And, you know, professional sport, endurance sport sometimes is incredibly draining on the body. So you really need, and I see this a lot, and it's kind of one of my pet hates about the endurance community, is the amount of bad food that's been consumed
because of calories,
you know?
Yeah.
And I think some of the, you know, you see some of the top guys in races, and mate, don't get me wrong, sometimes I've been in races or at the end of the race and, you know, it's pizza, pizza, pizza. You know, but then that makes that acceptable for the masses. It's like, oh, if Courtney DeWalter can have a beer and a pizza during this, then we can all do that. And it's like, guys, just calm down a little bit and put something in perspective. And that was actually when we first sort of moved into coaching endurance athletes, I was trying to debunk and figure out, like, why are they so overweight? Like, yeah. Why are these guys, they're training 20 hours a week. Why are they not ripped? You know, and that's probably a whole other conversation, but.
No, hey, listen, it crosses people's minds. You've been to ultras and they're not all, you know, 4% body fat folks. Well, I mean, look, hey, that's great. Right. But yeah, it's pretty interesting, right? It's the calories in, calories out equation. Sometimes doesn't work, or the, you know, the quality of the calories coming in.
Yeah. And I mean, that's really how I look at it as well, David. It's like, you know, you don't have to, you have to eat the way that works best for you. But what I always say to people is just try and eat good quality food.
Yeah.
And don't come cruising around my house in a Mercedes Benz and telling me that vegetables are expensive. You know what I mean? It's like, take care of what's inside you and fuel your body in the right way. And sometimes that does come at a cost. But when people are flashy as hell in other areas of their life and then just eating rubbish food, I'm like, how does this work?
So what's your main source of carbs on a paleo diet?
I will use we eat white potato and okay. just a lot of vegetables. I eat a lot of broccoli, but that's where it kind of gets sweet potato as well, a lot of sweet potato. But that's why I'll when I'm training a lot and I need more carbs, that's when I'll move and I'll stick rice in. And yeah. I've done quite a lot of tests on it as well. And it works super well. But pretty much most days we either have white potato or sweet potato with dinner and vegetables as well. So we eat a load of vegetables every single day. And also a lot of misconceptions I think about sort of paleo diet is the amount of meat that people eat. And, you know, it's not like, it's not a carnivore diet. I still try and limit the amount. So if I have a piece of steak or a piece of fish or something like that, it'll be around 180 grams to 200 grams. I'm not trying to put loads in because the body, that's one thing that I definitely sort of have learned, is that the body cannot digest too much protein at once. And that's where we come into real issues. So yeah, that's really how we... That's how we put it together. And, you know, obviously the as I said earlier, mate, the sweet treats are, and some of the stuff that Holly makes is just incredible.
Yeah, but the processed sugar stuff, that's, I mean, if you have one piece of advice on diet, is that what you'd say? You got to cut out the processed
sugar stuff. Just processed food generally, David. If you're going into a store and something is going to last for 6 months, 8 months, or a year, it's probably got a lot of crap in it.
Yeah.
And one of the major ingredients is sugar, and, you know, so just try and eat as fresh as you can. And this is where people sort of can make a big impact. Like, if you just take sugar, and I've done this with quite a few clients, if a client has 3 or 4 cups of coffee a day and they have 2 to 3 spoonfuls of sugar in each cup of coffee, just by cutting the sugar out, you're going to have a massive difference on how your body looks, feels, and performs. You know, there is going to be a stage where you're going to feel a little bit like you're coming off a substance, because sugar is incredibly addictive. It makes us feel good for a few minutes and then heads on the table. But I think in all areas, I always try and look with people for the biggest, smallest wins, if that makes sense. So it's just a small thing. You can still have all of your main course can stay the same. That's all fine at the moment. I don't want to touch that. I don't want to touch your breakfast, even if it's sugary cereal. I just want to focus on your coffee. Let's get those 8 spoons of sugar down to zero. And we'll start to feel the impacts of it. And please don't shop in tins and jars. Shop in stuff that comes hopefully in brown paper bags and will go off in 3 to 4 days, because that's the most natural food that you can eat.
And why broccoli? Why do you like broccoli so much?
I just like the taste of it, mate.
Oh, okay. I don't know if there's a secret superfood ingredient to that. I love it too. My wife made unbelievable roasted broccoli last night. Just puts it in the oven, a little bit of salt and pepper.
Oh, money. Mate.
Little tiny bit of drizzled olive oil. I mean,
beautiful. Yeah, I've always, even when I was a kid, I liked broccoli. I also like cauliflower.
Yeah,
you know,
that's great.
Cauliflower, broccoli roasted in the oven, like you said. There's no, I don't eat it. It's not like, what was it when kale sort of became trendy like 10 years ago? Everyone's like, superfood, I have kale. I'm like, I think kale is actually quite hard to prepare, to cook, to this, that, and the other. But broccoli, I just love it. Just steam it and it's great. You know, when I sort of stopped playing rugby, when I was playing rugby, I was a little bit heavier. I was about 96, 97 kilos. And I was probably about 12% body fat. And I wanted to get it sort of down into single figures. And I wanted to drop some muscle as well. And at that time, I actually ate a lot of broccoli and it was great. So I just love it.
All right. So what's next? So I assume you've got a couple of big challenges on the horizon other than just juggling your, you know, 20 things you have going on every day. But what, do you have any big audacious goals for the next 6 months?
Yeah. I do, David. It's a good and bad story in the fact that obviously because COVID has hit us all and a lot of the races that we generally travel to were cancelled. We looked at the map of the UAE and we looked at the mountain range, and as you sent it to one of my friends, I was like, the highest point of the UAE, if we ran all the way down that mountain range and back to our gym, I think it'd be about 250 kilometers. And he's like, yeah, sounds good. And it actually turned out it's 300 kilometers and it has the first 200 has about 8,000 meters of elevation. And so what we were actually planning to, I would have finished it last week, but as life goes, about 8 weeks ago, I was training, I was descending. I just was finishing about 60K for the day. Did something on my knee. It wasn't great. And I had to take 3 or 4 weeks off running. And that's when I spent a lot of time up early morning, podcasts, still riding my bike. There's always something you can train. So that's unfinished business. We still have the route and we still have the plan to do it. I actually just today moved it in my Training Peaks until the end of Feb. So we can still do that at the end of Feb. The weather would still be great because we'll do it a single stage, 300K as fast as we can. And we think we can do it in about 2 days. So all being well, we'll take that on in February. And then I'm excited to see what's going to happen next year with races. Obviously,
yes.
I love races because not just for the race, but for example, in 2019, I went to race in Sri Lanka. I went to race in Jordan. I raced in Kenya.
Oh, very cool.
All over the place. So the travel and meeting people, seeing these different countries, hanging out with like-minded lunatics or whatever you call us, ultra runners, is just, it's super good fun. So hopefully we'll get a little bit more chance to travel next year. I was speaking to one of my clients today who asked me to go to Moab with him towards the end of next year. I think that's in October. So,
great spot. That's a really cool spot.
Yeah, I mean, he sent me some pictures. I was like, it looks terrible there, mate. I don't think I'd like it. He's like, are you kidding? I'm like, yes, I'm kidding.
No, spectacular spot. All right. And because myself and probably 80% of our readers and listeners have had knee problems, give us the story on the knee problem right now. What are you doing for recovery?
Very good question. What it seems to be is just a little bit of overuse and probably a little bit of patella tendonitis.
Mm-hmm.
So I still do an incredible amount of strength work. I do a lot of lunging. I do a lot of squatting because I want to be a strong runner. I don't want to be a runner who can run fast, but breaks a lot. And which is a really interesting patella tendonitis in that area of the knee is a really interesting injury to rehab, because what it generally is caused by, it's caused by a little bit of malfunction or weakness in the quad. So vastus medialis obliques, vastus femoris, they're kind of maybe not firing and they're just not working properly. So the strain is going on to the patella tendon. Surprisingly as well, down at the bottom of the hamstring, you can get some weakness and some poor firing. And this is how knee pain is coming around. It's generally the muscles that are leading into the knee that are supporting and controlling the knee joint are just not working properly. So I'm a little bit of a Dr. Google guy, to be honest, David. I mean, I'm on websites, I'm reading, I'm testing stuff. So at the moment, just a lot of stuff, just really trying to cause a contraction in my quad without upsetting the knee joint, which are really small movements. It doesn't take a lot of weight, a lot of banded stuff. I found just recently, maybe people have used this before, the Spanish squat, which is quite interesting. Huh. Yeah, that's one to look up. The Spanish squat, it's basically you're banded. It's like a wall sit with a band and no wall, if that makes sense. So, you know, and this is one of the beautiful things of algorithms in things like Instagram is once you start searching, everything starts popping up on your feed.
Yeah.
So, you know, I also continue to do a lot of posterior chain work. So I'll do a lot of glute stuff, a lot of single leg stuff. So single leg deadlifts, a lot of balancing stuff, and just trying to really activate and work all of the muscles just in a singular way rather than, and this is in my training a lot, like, I'll do single leg kettlebell clean and jerks because that's really challenging me. And especially when we start to run on trail as well. So the carryover into the running sport, into trail running is huge as well. And often when we go to the gym, you know, we'll do lots of back squats, lots of front squats, and we'll not correct the imbalances that we have.
Yeah.
And from a lot of the runners that I see, if we can start correcting hip imbalances, because that's really, you know, that's where ankle problems are mainly starting. A small degree of hip imbalance can cause 5 or 6 degrees problem in your step, in your strike. It's carnage. So yeah, I find it fun, mate, because I learn, like, from these injuries, you kind of learn stuff, and you know, you that information again you can pass on. And so it's almost like for a few days, I was really upset. I was like, you know, we trained really hard and now it's off the cards. And, you know, it was my big event to get done, 2020. It's been a crazy year. I'm going to finish it on a high. I'm going to do something that no one's ever done before and blah, blah, blah. And you do lose your mind a bit for 3 or 4 days. And then you're like, okay, I'm done with that now. Let's get this fixed. So every day's great. And I'm happy to report that things are getting better. This week will be my biggest run week I've had for a while.
Good.
I'll run 50 or 60K this week, which is not huge. I normally do about 150. So I've still got some way to go, but things are going real good, mate. So thank you for asking that.
No, that's great. Yeah. I had a couple of years ago, I had a herniated disc I lost about 80% of the strength in my left leg. Wow. And same sort of thing. At first I was, you know, frustrated and didn't want to do surgery. And then once your attitude switches to say, hey, this is going to be kind of fun. So right now I can only do a one-legged leg press in the gym or leg extension with, you know, let's say 20 pounds. My right leg would be 100 pounds. When you start building that up, you're like, okay, all right, now I'm at 30 pounds, right? Now I'm at 40 pounds, still 60% down from my right leg, but it becomes, you know, once that mindset switches, it's pretty powerful, right?
Yeah. And that's really, you know, it's in ultra, it's in endurance, and it's in life, mate. Like, you've got to sort of look at the situation and go, actually, this is quite good fun, you know? And if your mindset's always open to learn something, and, you know, it's almost like, I remember when I was a kid, and people probably resonate with this, you know, your parents are like, go to your room, and you're like 5 minutes in your room, you've cried it all out, and now you're ready to come out and play again. It's the same thing. Like, if you weren't disappointed that you got injured and you couldn't run in a race or you couldn't do something, I don't think you'd be human.
Right, it's right, cool. Right.
But if 4 weeks later, you're still disappointed and you've let all of the training go and you're eating like crap and you're just in a bad mindset, then you need to do something about it. So, but yeah. No, mate, I love it. And, you know, because I guess I'm quite in touch with my body, and I know if something's working, because I'm a creature of habit. I'm really routine based. So if I change certain things, be it in my food, be it in my training, be it in my strength programming, I sort of notice a benefit if it's a beneficial change straight away. And I'm actually really enjoying it. Like, how often do you literally stay with your leg on the side of a bed and just tense it with no weight on it and just really focus on that VMO firing? Like, you hardly do that. But when you think about running, that guy's just working the whole time as the foot's hitting the floor along with your glute.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really interesting, mate. Really motivating. All right,
last question for you on this subject. So if you had, you know, I'm sure you're going to tell us every runner should do a battery of 12 strength exercises for their legs. But if you're only going to squeeze in one or two, what do you love lunges? Do you love split squats? What are your favorite one, two, or three exercises?
I'm going to be a little bit cheeky on you, and because I'm going to give you one, but there's a million variations.
All right, cool.
Lunge in every single plane that you can, and rotate your spine in any single way that you can to change the feeling of that lunge. If you said to me, you're only allowed to do one thing, it would be a lunge.
Wow.
Because you can load a lunge in so many different ways. You can go out every single angle. You can go laterally 45 degrees. I can load it by having a weight overhead. I can change it by just adding a rotation. Lunge is my go-to, and I give it to pretty much all of my athletes. I have a video that's like lunge variations, and you know, you're going to hit every single part of the leg. You can even be in a lunge and then do like a calf raise in the lunge. So it's a little bit of a cheat, mate.
But No. That's a great answer. We'll link out to that video.
I'll send it over to you. That's cool.
Oh, excellent. All right. We'll hit you with a couple. If you indulge us for just another minute or two, we'll hit you with a couple quick questions we've had with some of our other guests. We've got some great answers. So no pressure, but your answers have to be great.
Yeah.
Sorry, I set that up the wrong way. So real quick, favorite, I know you read a lot, you list a lot of great books on your website. We'll link out to that too. A lot of really good, thoughtful, inspirational stuff in there, but you had to pick one. If you narrow it down, favorite book of all time.
Richard Branson, Losing My Virginity.
Really?
Yeah. Love the guy. I love the fact that at his age, I don't know what he is, 75, 80 years old, he's riding his bike around his own island with his shirt off. Like, it's just brilliant. It's just, you know, anyway, that's not why I love the book. I read the book years ago. Great book. Really a great book.
Excellent. All right. We're going to add that on our list. Favorite movie of all time?
Top Gun.
Yeah.
I mean,
I love it.
It's probably the. I honestly, mate, I couldn't tell you the last movie I watched. I don't know. So,
oh, that's true. That's right. You said, you don't go to the cinema.
I'm not a movie buff. Of course, I've watched a lot of movies in my life, mate. But yeah, I think my favorite is probably Top Gun still. I love it. If you said watching it tonight, I'd have no problem.
As long as it's in the middle of a treadmill training session or something.
Yeah. We've got the technology these days.
It's good. No excuses. I think we know the answer to this. Morning workout, midday workout, evening workout. What's your favorite?
Morning by a long, long way.
Right. Yeah, no, perfect way to start the day. You've partially answered this. Do you like, if you're going for, let's say you're going out for a 10 mile run, do you like headphones, no headphones, music,
no
podcasts?
Headphones at all.
Great.
It's funny, I think this might be the catalyst. I'll try and make this quite short. When I was training for my 30 marathons in 30 days, I was listening to audiobooks because I was training a lot on my own. And when I started those marathons, I literally downloaded about 20 audiobooks. But I was so fortunate that every day people came and ran with me that I never even listened to one audiobook during that time.
Yeah.
And since then, I don't think I've put headphones in when I go running. When I go out for a walk, I'll listen to a podcast or an audiobook. But running for me, and for those of you that say, like, when's your downtime? When's your thinking time? A lot of it, mate, is when I'm running. When I've got problems with the business or things that I'm trying to think about, I'll go out, I'll run, and I'll solve it. So yeah. I'm earphones out and just I'm me and I'm just relaxing out there.
I'm with you. No, the morning and evening dog walks, I always have the headphones in, always have podcasts going, but runs never. I suppose I probably should try to clear the head on the walks too, but it's a good time to take in that information and learn something new.
Yeah, and that I think that's important as well. Like when I'm running, the run will often have a purpose. And sometimes I find that if it's a podcast or something like that, maybe I wouldn't, this was previously, maybe I wouldn't actually focus on what I'm listening to because I'm too worried that my heart's exploding or I'm not hitting the pace or something like that.
Yeah. Because a favorite podcast.
Oh, this is a good one. I like Rogan.
Yeah.
When he has a guest that I'm interested in.
Yes, I agree.
I do not like to listen to him when I don't really know who the guest is or what's going on. But I think doing a podcast myself, and I'm sure you'll appreciate this, the guy's ability to hold a pretty interesting conversation for 2, sometimes 3 hours is, he's very, very talented.
No, and totally agree.
Yeah.
I think I listened to the whole, he did a whole debate with, I think a vegan, a plant-based diet only advocate, right? I don't know if you ever caught that one, but
yes.
I think that went for 3 hours. I listened to every minute. It was fascinating.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
No, that's
and I think you appreciate, you know, you've asked me the questions today. Sometimes being a podcast host or a talk show host, as there are a lot of people out there at the moment, it's not an easy job.
No, it's harder than it looks. Yeah.
It's harder than it looks. And I know Rogan's show is super big, but yeah, massive respect. It's cool. I like him a lot.
All right. I'm fishing around on this one. I won't lead the witness. If you could wave a magic wand, do you think, would you get rid of the iPhone or is it a net positive for society?
That is one of the best questions I have been asked in 2020. I believe that it brings positives. I believe that we're in a state right now that it would be very difficult to go back. I would love to wave a wand and for it to be gone. However, it would completely change my business, which is fine. Yeah. But I think and look at what we're doing now.
Yeah,
you're in Boston, I'm here in Dubai. We've had a great conversation, which in a matter of days, however long it is, will be spread to a lot of people around the world. Hopefully we'll have helped some people and they'll probably listen to it on an iPhone. And that's really, that's
fair.
Really powerful. But I see a lot of negatives. I just wish that people would use their phones like they do their cars when they need them and not more than.
That is a good thought. That's a good way to put it.
I mean, you know, how many people, like, think about it, David, and I don't want to take too long from you, but how many people go, I'm bored. I'll just get in my car and I'll just scroll. Like sometimes you legit do, right? But seriously, we just spend time on these things where we could, you know, and that's the one of the greatest things, what we're talking about earlier is when I'm asking clients questions, you know, don't have time. All right, let's have a look at your screen time reports.
Yeah, here you go. Okay, there's your time. Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I've never been asked that question and it is a really, really good question, but I think I'd wave that wand and I'd kiss them goodbye, mate.
Good man. No, we have teenage kids, so I'm in your camp on this one, right? Because, and then look, they go away to a summer camp up in the mountains, and they'll go for 7 weeks with no phone. It's their favorite summer, 7 weeks of the summer, right, or the year. And we're like, okay, guys, what lesson are you learning from that, right? That's that human interaction and getting back to basics, and not even close. It's their favorite 7 weeks of the year, and there are no phones and no computers and no movies and television. So
anyway. It's cool. It's interesting. Actually, I had a conversation with my wife about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we're like, when we actually do next go on holiday, what about if when we get there, we put our phones in the hotel room safe?
Wow.
And leave them there. And I know some people probably actually do this, but yeah, I think since I started my businesses in 2008, I think every single day I've checked on my phone, except, and this is the crazy thing. When I go on a trip, when I go to these remote places, when I'm in an ultra, when I was in the mountains at the weekend for 2 days, and my phone doesn't work, I'm totally relaxed.
Yeah.
But when you know it's there and you know it works, then there's this temptation. So yeah, I try my best. I put my phone to bed. Like, you know, it's just after 6 here now. I'll check my phone for 15, 20 minutes after this, make sure everything's good. And then I just put it on airplane mode and it'll be in bed for the night. Man. I don't have it next to my bed. I just leave it in the kitchen and then I grab it tomorrow. But yeah, let's get rid of them. Let's start a crusade.
Waving, I like it.
Wand. Yeah.
I'm there we go. All right. Yeah. So last two quick questions for you. Best mentor in your career?
My dad, 100%.
Oh, good man.
Yeah, 100%. He's always been there, and he doesn't say much. So when he talks, I listen, and he never really gave me a lot of praise. So I worked bloody hard for it. And I know Holly thinks that makes me a little bit emotionless and a bit cold now, but I love my dad. He's incredible.
One of my favorite quotes of all time, Mark Twain, great American author, said, "I left home at 18, and when I returned at age 22, I could not believe how much my dad had learned." So you know, when you're a kid, you know, it's in one ear out the other, but then you're like, huh. All that stuff he was telling me that whole time. He was on the mark. All right. If you could have dinner with one person, living or deceased, who would it be?
This is really simple. I'll have dinner with my wife. I've been weird. And I know,
good man.
People might think that that's a bit cheesy and stuff. I mean, if I had to have dinner with someone outside of my family, like, my answer to that question is always the same. There's no one as important in the world as my family, mate. If you said you have to have dinner with someone outside of your family, I would love to have dinner with someone like Trump or Obama, like a president, just to drill them with questions. I know the whole Trump thing's a bit boring now, but even Boris Johnson or John Major or Maggie Thatcher, just a former prime minister or president, country leader, because they're all such unique people and have done very interesting things, be it positive or negative. So I think to have a chat with them would be super interesting and quite amusing in a number of ways.
No, it's a great point. It would be fun to say, like, hey, what was really going on, right? I know this is what you told the media. This is what people wrote about you, but what was really happening? You know?
Exactly, mate. See, so, we're on the same page.
All right, here, man. All right.
Cool. It's cool.
I'm going to walk in the other room now and tell my wife that no one in the world I want to have dinner with more than her. Even Tom Brady or, you know, my idols, Hey, well, good stuff, Marcus. You're such good sport for hanging out with us and awesome insights. This is really fun stuff. I know our listeners will eat this stuff up. This is right in the wheelhouse of what we all think about every day. So it's really good, refreshing perspective on all these.
Oh, I appreciate it, David. I appreciate your time. I appreciate what you're doing. And as we were saying about Rogan, I appreciate your good questions, mate. And hopefully some of what I said resonates with some of the listeners and some people are able to take it away. But if there's one thing I could leave you with, just remember, I said it, we're all climbing our own Everest. So
love that.
Keep climbing in your way. Use what I've used, but please don't try and live how I live. It won't work.
Good stuff, Marcus. Hey, we'll talk soon, I hope.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Best of luck and everything. Take care.
Yes. Bye-bye.